OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehill and Paul Murphy.
It is The Hurling Pod, the last one of February, as we start to get into the real business end of the league. Double-digit defeats for Tipperary the last two times the Cork came to Thurles, an embarrassing defeat in the Championship last year. Well, they've broken that streak, and Tipperary now sit top of Division 1A of the Hurling League after this weekend, after their win against Cork. Lee Chin was back. Makes a huge difference for Wexford. They've given themselves a lifeline at the bottom of Division 1A. We'd all written them off for relegation a couple of weeks ago, but they won away from home against the All-Ireland champions Clare today. James Skell said the All-Ireland champions had a 75% chance of going down before the break. We'll get his updated percentage in a second. And Dan Ravenhill's monster 77-minute free at Croke Park secured a dramatic win for Offaly, who are the new leaders in Division 1B after their win against Dublin. And brace yourself for some more arguments as well about thrown hand passes, because the Tipperary motion was pretty soundly beaten at Congress at the weekend. Paul Murphy, how are you?
Good, Will. Yourself?
I am very well, because we need to say happy birthday to James Skell. James Skell, how are you?
How are we?
4-0, Skell. Unbelievable.
Shut up, I'm 37.
To give Skell some credit, at his ripe age now of 37, you were described as a monster in the gym in Ballinasloe when I bumped into a journalist during the week. And you then told us all about a world record afterwards. So oh, what was that? Yeah. What was that world record, Skell? You were telling us while you were out for your 37th.
So I was out for my 37th birthday, myself and my wife, and we were chatting in the WhatsApp group, obviously, and we're talking. You mentioned about that the gym, and then I said my sister actually, you know, about the high rocks situation. She we're doing high rocks together in the mixed doubles. I said she's a beast, you know. And I said her deadlift, like I wrote down, I won't give her weight away now, but she's light. Okay. But she could deadlift 195.5 kilos, which Murph in checked would be a world record. So that was a typo on my behalf.
for her body weight versus the deadlift.
It's 105 kilos.
It was over three times her body weight.
Yeah. I looked back today and said, oh my God, you're such an idiot. Tim Bice probably thinks she's on juice. Like,
well, I was rattled last night now, because when I saw it, like having done fitness tests with the club over the last few years and the deadlifts being thrown into it, I was like, Jesus Christ, that's right up beside my best ever. And I was about 40 kg. So
it ruined you.
Oh, Jesus, yeah, like him. Yeah, thankfully you corrected it today anyway, though.
Well, you see, I just kind of assumed that you were correct, because when I put into the group that she was a human ant, when I realised it was, I think, 3.2 times her body weight she was lifting, I was thinking, he hasn't actually, like, you didn't budge when I said that. And I was thinking, actually, hold on, maybe she is deadlifting nearly 200 kilos here.
Well, straight up, Will, I didn't know what you meant.
Right, okay. You're an ant. An ant is able to lift their own body weight, more than their own body weight, essentially.
Yeah.
They're well known in the insect kingdom for being remarkably strong.
Remarkably strong, but like in strength terms, right? If you can like lift your own body weight, that's fine. If you can do twice your body weight in anything, that's very, 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 very impressive. Let alone 3.25 times your body weight, okay? that's forklift country.
I was ready to send her to Iceland for the strong women competitions at the end of the year with the numbers you were putting up. So I was quite relieved when you said, actually, no, switch that 0 for a 9. It makes a lot more sense.
And you didn't correct me, like. This is the part I was laughing.
Sure. Like, I mean,
I was laughing so hard at this when I said, Paul Murphy, right? And Willa Callahan think my sister can deadlift almost 200 kilos and she's only a small little thing.
Well, she has Skell blood in her, so I just thought this one's every week you're talking about lifting bales and castor, and so I was like, Jesus, maybe Michelle was just doing that her whole life. And she has in Ballinasloe. There's some woman setting a record up in Ballinasloe gym, a world record, and hasn't been copped yet.
She's,
aside from that, how was your birthday?
Birthday was good. We were in Galway last night and we stayed in the Glenlow Abbey Hotel, which is lovely. Beautiful spot. I'd highly recommend it.
Fair play.
Very, very nice. I can say, I doubt she listened to the podcast now. But it's grand to get away from the kids, lads. I should show up for a night, you know what I mean? In all fairness, don't get me wrong, I love them to be, but just a little bit of silence every now and then is great. It's really, really good. It's good for the mind and body. So...
Let's just hope that she doesn't get a fancy at some point to go, I think I'll listen back to the last week of February from 2025 and see what Dad said on the podcast back then. Oh, look, it's nice and wholesome chat about my aunt. She's able to lift 200 kilos. Oh, I didn't even know that. And then you realise you have a go at the kids. I think you're safe.
Actually, yeah. And a side note as well, my sister was telling me as well that she was listening to the podcast. And she's like, why are you talking about Boozham? And I was like, what? And I said, are you on last year's podcast?
Yeah, that was well into last year.
She looked back and she goes, I am actually. She's on last year.
Did she not notice any of the results weren't matching up with what was actually happening?
I was like, what are you talking about? I think like, Boozham was ages ago. That was the food episode. Yeah.
That's also quite worrying that maybe the National Hurling League is just a cycle at this stage and that there have been repetitive results from last year to the point that whatever we were talking about sounded perfectly plausible.
Yeah, that's an absolutely fair point, yeah. So that's two corrections that she's doing. On her behalf.
Well, look, she can lift her problems away with her world record lifts in Ballinasloe. Unfortunately, we only got to see one game in the TV, which wasn't the plan, as we should have had Limerick against Kilkenny. We're recording on Sunday night at the moment. That was going to be the Sunday afternoon game. Paul Murphy was going to be on off the ball for the afternoon, providing updates with John Duggan. And alas, around 11 o'clock, we got the news that Nolan Park was going to be unplayable after the pitch inspection. So we didn't get that game on TV. It was replaced by Gaelic football. So we also missed and didn't get to see the shock with Wexford beating Clare. The game in Croke Park, despite the cameras being there for the game at 7:30, wasn't filmed. So I think any footage that anyone has seen is probably the Dan Ravenhill score, which was taken by the Offaly stats team and was put up last night. But that's the only place you will have seen that. On the TV, though, we did have Tipperary's win, 222 to 121 at Semple Stadium. Darren McCarthy looks like he's going to be the top scorer in the league come the end of it. He's putting up big totals now. There were people a few weeks ago who were saying to us, yeah, it looks like he's got a really high ceiling, but don't be putting too much pressure on him because he's scoring the points from frees primarily. But 5 points from frees, 5 points from play. Jake Morris with 1-1 during the game. Dylan Walsh got the other goal. And the returning Jason Ford with 3 points. Dara Fitzgibbon again leading the scoring for Cork. He had 11 points, seven of them from dead balls. And Patrick Corgan scoring three when he came off the bench. Brian Hayes with their goal. If we can start off with McCarthy there, Skell, I know you were complimenting him around the Galway game because you were saying that people will look down and say, right, he's hit his dead balls really well during the game. But you made the point he was making space for others and actually winning quite a few of his own frees. Mm-hmm. At this stage, he looks like one of the real breakthrough players in the league, doesn't he?
Yeah, like you have to commend him for, like, he's a 19-year-old kid, like, and that's the thing about it is he's a kid in senior terms. Hitting dead balls at senior level is no mean feat. To be as accurate as he is, and then as industrious as it is in the full forward line for his movement, because when you watch him when he picks up the ball, it's not in the one corner the whole time. His lateral movement is back and forth, so he's creating space for himself and others. And like his performance yesterday was exceptional. It really was exceptional for a 19-year-old. That's not lost to me. It's really not, because I watched him, you know, semi closely with the 20s, you know, in recent years, and like he's just been extremely impressive and extremely consistent. Which sometimes you get young lads who come onto a team and they can be kind of up down a bit in terms of performance. They could have a really good day, and the next day they mightn't back it up. He's backing up every day. Like I'd be shocked. He's an absolute shoo-in to start corner forward, regardless of who to bring back. In fairness, and this is ahead of, look, if it came down to decision making at the moment, and you were saying, right, are we going to go for John McGrath? Yeah, I'm talking free taking terms. John McGrath, Jason Ford, or Darren McCarthy. We're going McCarthy, you know, because he's proven at the moment. And like, if you're hitting the ball over the barrel, let's say in the current conditions, heavy pitches, bad footing, wind and rain, as we well know, like come summer he'll be flying it. So he's a huge performance and a huge plus for Tip.
Yeah, Murph, the phrase goes, Tip are back. Are Tip actually back?
It's definitely one of the best performances we've seen from him in a while now. Like, I know, okay, look at the Galway performance and different things, and for different reasons we kind of pointed at, well, can we really take a gauge from this, because we didn't see anything from Galway that evening that would be resistance against the Tip performance. But Cork were really good, you know, Cork were really good last night. It's just Tip didn't allow them. Cork came back at Tipperary, you know, they got their own goal, Brian Hayes' goal, but like Tip still reacted really well. And a few things that I really liked, yeah, Darren McCarthy, brilliant in the forwards. I think he got 4 points on the trot in the first half, small things like that. But for so long, we've been talking about like Jason Ford kind of holding down the fort there for the Tip forwards and getting huge scores. Like, he chipped in with, I think he had 3 points last night from play. And it didn't feel like that the onus was on, you know, Jason Ford to perform here. Like Jake Morris, the goal, outstanding how he took it. And like, you'd kind of expected from someone like Jake Morris, like he's a very efficient finisher. But like, one step inside the 21 to finish that well, is no mean feat. We saw like just so many players, like Ronan Marr was outstanding. I know he got man in the match. Probably myself would have given it to Darren McCarthy just because, you know, 5 from free, 5 from play is a fair return on a tough night against Cork. But all over the field, like Alan Tynan, outstanding as well. They got so many scores from different places. And Jake Morris actually referenced it after game. And actually, you know, really, I haven't heard Jake Morris interviewed a whole lot. But thought he spoke really well. And the one impression I got off him was just that, you know, they were searching for this performance for a long time. And obviously, after the last 2 years of playing Cork and losing by double-digit figures, there was obviously quite an emphasis placed on this. And he referenced, you know, maybe kind of wanting to do it for Liam Cahill as well, that Liam Cahill was owed a victory of this kind. So you could see there was a lot wrapped up in it, but they were really impressive. You know, Willie Connors at midfield, we spoke about him over the in the first two games as well, you know, getting through a lot of work. There was just so many places you could point towards that Tipperary were really impressive with. Even if you look at the second goal there, Craig Morgan setting it up for Dylan Welch, both goals were fairly identical from the sense that Barry Hogan pokes it down, a big win. Well, not to say a win, the first ball, Alan Tynan with a mighty catch. The second goal breaks off Jason Ford and Downey, if I'm correct. And, you know, Craig Morgan times his run, true on goal, pops it off to Dylan Welch and a great goal. So there's so many things there. And like for me, the score of the match, Darren McCarthy's point, 36 minutes, just as the teams are about to go down the tunnel into the in for half time, out over at the sideline, pops it over. Like, there were so many things to pick through there, but really, as an overall 70 minute performance, it's the best performance I've seen from Tip in a while. And I think a lot of the supporters will take huge amount from that. They really do look like they've taken a step further. And I think that's the big thing I take from this. This is a really positive step in the right direction for Tipperary. Like, there's so many things we could look at over the last few matches and even last year to say that there's nothing significant here to say that Tipperary have taken a step forward. But that performance on Saturday, I think, is one step in the right direction for Tip.
Would you go along with that, Skell? I mean, there's probably a few different caveats with the other games. So Galway weren't really at it. They kind of let Wexford back into the game a little bit. And then with the Limerick one, it was the fact that the scores had dried up from play in the second half. But we've been emphasising for the last few weeks, because there's this kind of perception out there that we're anti-Tip in some way. Last week, we've all been saying, looks like Tip are a bit further ahead of their development than some people were maybe giving them credit for. For me, this is much closer to what you want to hope to see Tipperary performance level-wise as we go further into the year.
Yeah, you're right. And I also take note of what Murph said about Jake Morris' interview, but I heard Ronan Maher's interview also during his Man of the Match performance presentation, and they both used the same word, hurt, which is very, it's kind of rare. So it's obviously something that's been addressed, you know, I presume by management, by players, maybe by both, I don't know. But when they use the same word, it signifies that they're like really upset with the way last year petered out. It's fine. I can understand that. And the last couple of times they played Cork, they have been tough days of them. So there's obviously an understanding of that team that they have to kind of right a few wrongs, get back on the wheel, get back on the winning front. And like Jake Morris made a really good point in saying that you can't look backwards. You can't be looking at the past, keep going forward. So it's like the team has been rejuvenated and they all look really lean, fit, strong, which shows that there's a lot of work done over the course of the winter. And it's like, it's, to say Tip are back, like Tip never go away. That's a fact. They're too proud of a hurling county. It's just kind of get the pieces together and perform. And like, they're heading in the right direction. You look at people that are on about Liam Cahill and his record and teams, the way that sometimes that, you know, they can peter out. You know, you can use that that phrase. But look, if they keep winning and keep performing and keep talking the way they did, and like their backs, I know everyone looks at the forwards, but they're half hurling is between Tynan and Jake Morris and Gareth O'Connor. They put themselves up and down that pitch. They were the outball for all the Tipperary backs. Then they were run up in support. They were, you know, going down the toe to the Cork defence. And that's a huge line for me for looking at those three guys. And I think they're positioned perfectly, if I'm honest. I think Jake Morris is really, really well suited to 11. Gareth O'Connor, we know, is a behemoth, a wing forward. And Tynan just goes around and hits everything. You know, hits everything, gets on loads of balls, sets up loads, runs hard. You know what I mean? So that's like a bit of a platform for Tipperary. So they're in really good stead. Now, we take the league with a pinch of salt every year, and that's fair. But you have to understand as well, like, that when the team like Tipperary and their players are using words like hurt, like that's sticking in my brain now, so that they're going to carry this through to the championship. Like, this is not just going to be a flash in the pan performance or a couple of good weeks put together. They're heading down the road, heading towards July in their minds, you know what I mean? And that's a great thing for us as hurling supporters, like, to get every good county back.
Yep, and look, they're positioned nicely. At this stage, they've got 6 points on the board at this stage, so they're not looking over their shoulder because of the position they put themselves in. And why not for the next three games, go and give it a right good bash, get into a league final and try and get some silverware before a championship comes around. Is that the way they should approach it from here, Murph?
Yeah, like my overall, I suppose, outlook for Tipperary, for them, for the whole league, was just that, to come away from the league having taken some really positive steps and kind of banishing a few of the ghosts of last year. That's really it. They won't be judged on what they do in the league this year. It'll be more so they want to secure a spot getting out of Munster. That's the end goal at the moment. There's no point in looking further than that and talking hypotheticals, because you don't know what's going to happen with other teams either. So Tipperary's main goal at the moment is, well, we want to secure a spot getting out of Munster. Whether that's the third spot or whether that's a Munster final spot, who cares? Just secure a spot. Between now and then, what we need to do is take positive steps. And I think find a real structure of, well, what team is it that we're going to play? And okay, a few players may move around within that, but find a real structure that works and, I suppose, complements the players that we have at the moment. And I think Skell kind of touched on it there. They hinted at that the other night. Like, you know, Alan Tynan has played everywhere from wing back to wing forward. And he I think he's better utilised in the half forward line, because very similar to Bonner Maher type player in that he gets through a lot of work and kind of allows, like even Garrod O'Connor does get through a lot of work, but you'd associate, if you're to put players in different camps, to say, are you kind of more out and out score? That's what we want you to there to get score. Yes, work, but score. You know, Alan Tynan is one of those lads who will get scores, but his work rate is outstanding. And I think just finding where those players are going to sit, that's the big thing. And the other night we saw a little bit of a click happening where it was like, yeah, this is, you know, this is working here. But again, it's the question is putting all this together. I don't think it really matters if Tipperary have silverware at the end of the league. But I think if Tipperary will be happy enough, if they exit the league with no silverware, but coming away going, yeah, we know a lot about ourselves now, and going into Munster, mm-hmm. you know, looking at other results, let's say Clare, for example, at the moment. Okay, Clare just look a little bit ring rusty. They're all Ireland champions. Mm-hmm. They look a little bit ring rusty. They might point to Cork and say, okay, we'll see what Cork perform like when it comes to, but they can only worry about themselves. Again, Waterford as well. Waterford, great performance this weekend, but lost to Carlow. So they'll be looking to say, well, there's a gap probably here. And if we get our house in order, who cares what Limerick is doing? Who cares what anyone else is doing? We want to look after our own games and get into the top three. And at the start of the year, there might have been a question over that. Certainly, I would have put a question over it, because you would have had to say Cork, Clare, Limerick. But now you'd be kind of going, okay, actually, Tipperary are really showing here that they're gonna cause serious problems in Munster. And like, I think that's what all Tipperary supporters were looking for. Where was that spark coming from? And we saw the spark on Saturday night.
I'm smiling for only one reason, and that's because you've talked yourself into a top three in Munster discussion before we even get into March. So
no, I didn't. I hinted at it. It's like a teaser. It's a teaser.
It wasn't me.
I know, yeah.
I turned you into it.
How do we assess Cork then? I'm interested in both of you in this, but we'll go to you first, Gail, because I was listening to Sarah O'Donovan on Off the Ball Breakfast during the week, and she was making the point that it's like all this depth that's now there in the Cork panel. And so even at the weekend, we got to see Micheál Mullins come in, Robbie Cotter come in, they brought Healy and Jack Callan off the bench to get their first appearances. So we're seeing even more depth being introduced. But the point that she was making was, because of the injuries they have, so it was half a dozen changes again from the Limerick game that we saw this weekend, that maybe they're not quite getting those combinations in yet and maybe working out some of the key positions. That's kind of the thing that Cork have to do between now and Championship, isn't it?
Yeah, like I think from Cork's perspective, it's giving them time in league games, as I was saying, and getting them used to the kind of a pre-Championship feel against top-level opposition. You know, that's more important for me, and I'd imagine for Pat Ryan as well, than winning league games at all costs. You know what I mean? So it's a strong point, I know, by what has been said, but like the league, we know ourselves, it's a different kettle of fish when it comes to Championship, and you have to know what you have. And last year, unfortunately, Cork were short. So if they can find someone new, and like in Cotter, who's Cotter, and like I have Cotter down, you know, man was very impressed with the wing back. What was his name? Mullins, Micheál Mullins, is it?
Yeah.
He was very impressed with wing. And I know I was praising that the Tipperary half forward, don't get me wrong, but also you can have the Cork wing back play well too. So again, they're finding players. And they'll mould them in, and they get the combinations right. There's loads of time as of yet, so no panic in Cork.
Yeah, I was reading last week, he had a lot of kind of niggly injuries last year, which kept him out for a while. There was an interview in the Cork Echo about it. Apparently, Pat Ryan was saying he wanted to use him a little bit earlier, and that slowed it down a little bit. So he is, yeah. Again, yeah. I thought Caesar for Tipperary was very good as well, Murph. Not to get off the beaten track in Cork last week in a second, but he surely had to be near contention for man of the match in his first start as well.
Yeah, he did. He was getting on a lot of ball, and I think for a lot of his work was really put into winning that primary possession. There was a lot of dirty ball around the middle of the field. He was just getting stuck in, getting a few flicks, getting on ball. And he constantly, you know, it just, for especially for the first, I'd say, 20 minutes, half an hour, his name was constantly just being mentioned for being on it. So, yeah, hugely involved. I suppose the only thing was that between himself and, let's say, Ronan Marr and Darren McCarthy, Ronan Marr made a few huge possessions and really steadied the ship. Shane Barrett kind of got on top at the start, but Ronan Marr grew into the game. And yeah, his ability to steady the ship, I suppose, like I said, for Tip, was hugely instrumental. So, look, Caesar had a great game. He was mighty. But, yeah, look, just, I suppose, on the night, there was a few really stellar individual performances.
What about Barry Hogan and goals?
Are you pointing to something in particular? Like,
brilliant. I thought he was extra.
Oh, yeah. He was. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean when you say pointing to something in particular. You were saying good performances. I was like, I was really impressed with him. Two huge saves. Yeah. Puckouts were excellent.
Yeah, two of his puckouts contributed to goals. Like, you know, yeah. Which is, but you know yourself, like, they can look like just aimless pucks, but they're not. There's no puck out anymore that's aimless. It's all well intentioned. But I suppose landing in the right area.
You know, them puckouts that say that people. Obviously, the television is obviously panned towards the keeper, right? He hits the ball, it pans over into where the ball is landing, right? But what we don't see is the movement from the forwards, and Hogan positioned the ball exactly where the forwards are going to end up. So they're not putting the ball, do you know where he is? They're putting the ball where he's going to be, if you like. That to me as well could be somewhat of an orchestrated move. I know the goals look like they were just two breaks of the ball, but long ball, down the middle, through the throat of the Cork defence, two goals. So it's a weapon. You know, we spoke about that with Patrick Collins last year, remember, with the long ball that Limerick struggled with it?
Yeah,
because it creates a little bit of chaos when you can hit that ball that long into like the near the top of the D, the hurling D, rather the flipping the canarch football ash shite. But sorry, I went off there. I saw the Americans on the Tipperary pitch. I was like, sacred ground, putting that big D in it, a big arc.
You'd be right in saying, even for Barry Hogan, wasn't it his puck out that Kildangan bet? Was it Lochmore Castellini? Was it 2-3 years ago? Remember, it was literally, I think Lochmore got a point. Yeah, just at the net. And it was literally poked the ball out so quick that the referee, I suppose, not caught between two minds.
You're right.
But it just, he was so quick and proactive. And he got such a slap on the ball that it allowed Kildangan one more play and they got a goal out of it. If I'm right in saying, I think, it was Barry Hogan.
That is good hurling knowledge, Omar.
That's good memory,
I'm impressed.
It's one of the things, like, do you know, when you think about a player, you have kind of, you have images of different plays they've had imprinted into your mind. And I just remember, off the top of my head, if you look back at the video of that, I think it was a 65 or something, Lochmore Castellini got it and went over. It was a free, something like that. And he was ready with the ball. And like, it's a small thing, but if he took a sign about that puck out, the referee probably blows it. But as the referee is writing it down or doing whatever, gets it down the field, you have one more play. Wouldn't the county final for them? Like, you know, so there's another example of a puck out. He's effective puck outs, like.
Yeah.
Skell, I'll flip the question back on you because they have two very good goalkeepers with Shelley and with himself. Who do you prefer out of the two?
That's a good question. In fairness. Again, it's hard to know because we've only seen them in matches, like a couple of matches so far. But more hurling knowledge. Am I right in saying, Les, that Cahill gave Shelley his debut mid championship, didn't he?
I don't know about that. Now
I think he's really digging at the stats. I'm open to correction.
Have a look here now.
Don't worry. While he googles this, I've no doubt in the YouTube when this goes up tomorrow, there'll be Tipperary people.
I have a vague memory that I think Hogan was in goals for a good period because Barry Hogan replaced Brian Hogan.
Yeah,
and then Barry Hogan, I think now got dropped for Shelley mid championship.
Of May 2023, he made his championship debut in the third round of the Munster Championship against Limerick. There you go.
So Hogan obviously kept goal for the first two games then.
So when you look at Shelley, right, you know, I'd say, well, I think at the time, if I remember something correctly, Cahill was pointing towards his puck out and the accuracy and the range of his puck out as a reason for playing him. But like, he hasn't been, Tipperary, there was no fault of Shelley for Tipperary's loss against, And like that now, it's how do I put this now? It's very hard when you're looking at goalkeepers, right? It's fine margins, right? Because the goalkeeper, are you a platform for your opposition or your offense, you could say. So when I look at Hogan today and look at the two goals and go, yeah, you're contributing to your offense. Like when we have the ball in puckouts, can we get a score off this? Can we contribute straight away to a score? And evidently he does because of the long puckout he has. So right now, as a keeper, I really like Hogan. I like his range. I like his height for catching. I like his shot stopping, both low and high. I like the way he plays off the line. He's a big presence. I'd be leaning towards him. He's got experience. I know Shelley has too, minor. But I'd be heading towards Hogan. I think today was a standout performance for him to try to create a little bit of separation between the two. Again, but that's not me, you know, putting down Shelley. Shelley's a fantastic goalkeeper too. But I just think that Hogan probably offers a little bit more, in my view. But again, Cahill gave him his debut and looked at his puck out of his range, so maybe he'll put him back in. But again, big performance from Chip, and Hogan was a huge contributor. So
yeah, because as I recall, wasn't there one of those games where Hogan was in when they were flipping between him and Shelley, and then Hogan had this monster puck out against Limerick on the day they overloaded them on the puck out. Summer day targeted the two wingbacks that day, and Tipperary got a bit of change over. The Hogan just had this monster puck, as I recall. Again, someone is going to point out that I'm wrong here, but I remember definitely, I'm going to say that was two seasons ago when they did it. It was one of the first days that Limerick got like pressured, let's say, on the opposition puck out. I think it was Hogan bombing him that day.
I think you're right, because I'm trying to remember who was wing forward.
Was that not a Munster final, no?
I don't think it was a Munster final. It was in
no,
the
Munster Championship.
Limerick. Am I wrong there? Was it from the day Limerick came back in the real hot day in Páirc Uí Chaoimh? They were like 10 points down at halftime.
No, it wasn't that day. No, this day, Dermot Burns. I have two lads in my head. It was either Alan Tynan or Willie Connors. I actually think it was Willie Connors, because I think Willie Connors scored 3 points off him at Dermot Burns. And then...
That's a good one, no?
It was the first one to kind of... Yeah, but then Willie Connors wasn't a member of the panel the following year, so it could be wrong, but...
We're pulling out hurling memories here, so yeah.
By all means, correct us in our memories of this, but that was my memory of it was him just absolutely... hammering the ball down the pitch, which caused problems for Limerick, because we're so used to Limerick like just winning the opposition puck out quite a bit, and Tipperary went very aggressive on them that day. So I'm pretty sure that was Cal's first championship year when that happened as well. So
yeah,
again,
wasn't
open
that,
to correction.
Wasn't that kind of the reason? Am I right in saying wasn't that the reason that Brian Hogan then was kind of I presume dropped, was that his range of puck out was seen as a potential weakness by Cal?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because it has kind of been Hoganella and Shelley as the two choices really over the last year and a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. We got totally off the beaten track, but that's the whole point of the podcast. Murph. I was meant to ask you about what your assessment of Cork. Tell us about your assessment of Cork within the game itself first.
From me, is it? Sorry. Cork were good. Cork were really snappy. Their use of the ball, they're very calm on the ball, and their ability to work it out is really good. Like, Cork weren't bad on Saturday night. They played like a team that... it's like they were playing about 85% of their ability. Like, that's the one thing about Cork is you're asking what do we expect from Tipperary from the year. The thing about Cork over the last few years, capable of winning the All-Ireland, but also at the same time capable of not getting out of Munster, depending on what Cork turns up. Unbelievably skillful team. And the other night, they showed all the skill, but didn't dig it out. When Tipperary were coming at them, just didn't dig it out. Part of me thinks, though, that, you know, Pat Ryan is in the position where he can go into this game and not necessarily decide exactly he knows what subs he's going to bring in, but kind of commits to going, I'm going to bring on these lads and give them a chance, regardless how the game is going. And you kind of have that luxury when you've been successful. Like, they were successful last year. There's no point in saying anything else. They bet Limerick and were in the All-Ireland final, just lost the All-Ireland final. So I think, you know, Pat Ryan goes to the same going, I have three lads in my head who are definitely coming on regardless what stage. And then I have the luxury of also bringing on like Patrick Horgan or whoever as well to try and bolster it. But, you know, I think teams, particularly in Cork's position, and Tipperary, I believe, didn't have this luxury last night or on Saturday night. Cork had the position of, okay, we'll try these lads. For good, bad or indifferent, we'll play them. But at least we'll learn more about ourselves because we know we're getting back lads, you know. So for me, on Saturday, Cork were about 85% really in terms of their performance. And I mean that from a type of hunger and a work rate. They performed really well, but was that killer instinct there? No, it wasn't. They still had opportunities to go and win the game. But I just think that if Cork had their full complement, this is where it differs for me. Cork had their full complement. I think they would have won this game by quite a few points, because that experience wasn't there to actually just close out the game. And if you look at the younger players then for Tipperary, they probably just made a bigger impression. Again, we mentioned Darren McCarthy 20 times at this stage. Yeah. But there was just that was really what tipped the scales for me. But there's no concern for Cork here. Like, we don't have to sift through the ashes of this one for Cork and go, well, what does this mean for Cork? It doesn't mean anything for Cork. It meant a lot more for Tipperary. And as well, if you look at it, what was it, 4 points in the end? This was obviously one that, you know, Ronan Maher, Jake Morris said it after game that, you know, there was hurt, there was hunger, there was obviously a bullseye on this game. There was no bullseye really on this game for Cork. Yes, they wanted to win it, But it wasn't the one where they were going, if we don't win this, you know, it's a big step backwards. They put in a good performance and they move on to the next task. I think that's really it for Cork. I don't think there's a huge amount to sift through for them.
They probably weren't as slick at Murphy as you'd like, are they? Were they?
Not
Tip looked very slick. You know what I mean? I thought Tipperary, like their ability to pack out their defence and get like 8, 9, 10 lads inside the 65 was exceptional. Very high work ethic, very fitness orientated. So it was very difficult for Cork. Cork had to shoot, you know, like I would say, out beyond their 65 a lot, which kind of goes against sometimes their play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Good lethal inside forwards. And like you said about Ronan Maher, you made a great point about him that he had to get to grips with Shane Barrett after the first like 5 or 7 minutes.
Yeah.
There were times where you actually asked yourself, is Shane Barrett still on the pitch? You know what I mean? Yeah. And we're talking about exceptional hurler in Shane Barrett. So for Maher to do that in the central channel, let's say, you know, was huge. So I just don't think Cork were slick. I just don't think they're you're again, good point that they weren't championship hunger.
There wasn't. No.
They came and whatever happened, whatever was going to happen was going to happen, in the sense that, you know, with Pat Ryan and trying guys out. Mm. I don't think there's any reason for concern in Cork whatsoever. No cause for concern. They got minutes into some young bodies. They're not as slick. They weren't as, you know, fast as you do to associate with Cork. And that'll come when the ground dries up. Weather gets better, evens get long, those Cork lads will fly back into a fast ball again.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that like Pat Ryan already has two things to point towards. Like often when managers want to communicate a problem or an issue or something they want to improve on, you'd be hoping that the game will give you the example as plain as day to try and demonstrate what you're trying to talk about. And there's two examples. Like the first goal, Alan Tynan, great catch. But then two of the Cork lads get sucked into Alan Tynan and nobody watches Jake Morris. And Alan Tynan, he doesn't even have to look where he's hand passing the ball. He just pops it away.
A catch uncontested.
Well, this is it.
How does that happen? Like,
uncontested, but at the same time, Alan Tynan has two lads around him when he lands, in that one lad stay with him. It's the old thing of, like, you know, two lads up, but also, you know, you don't need two lads to mark Alan Tynan once he lands. And then the second one, like, who's marking Craig Morgan when he just runs through? Now, again, it's not red flags around him for Cork, but Pat Ryan will turn around and say, lads, come on now, in fairness, like, tracking a runner like that, that's bread and butter stuff. Just track a runner, even if he's not your man, you follow him. So he'll turn around and say, lads, there's 6 points that we, to an extent, handed over. Like, it wasn't complicated play that confused us. It was heads up stuff. Look at, there's a man running through here and track him. So I think, you know, I think those are just two things straight away that's plain as day that Pat Ryan will turn around and say, lads, yeah, look, we're doing great stuff here. We're moving the ball really well. We're getting lovely scores. We're doing all these things. But again, it's the nuts and bolts here, the small things of just tracking the runners, where we're handing over simple scores. That's really been it, you know.
Murph, in that circumstance, right, and obviously the right thing to do defending-wise would have been having someone tracking Alan Tynan and to be contesting that ball when it travels quite a distance before he catches it.
Yeah.
If you end up in the same situation, right, say you're at the cornerback and there's a wing-back there with you, and as you said, two guys are there by the time the Tynan hits the ground, I presume the right thing to do, one guy goes to pressure him and the other guy goes to cover.
Yeah.
Kind of instinctively.
Like, the main thing is there, like, that's kind of a, not to say quite a simple one, but if you're marking Jake Morris, and I can't remember who the two Cork lads are, but it doesn't matter. If you're marking Jake Morris, what it looked like to me that happened there was Alan Tynan called it, because Jake Morris didn't go up. Alan Tynan called it. So then you can hear there's a roar coming. So straight away, you know, there's a Tipperary player coming behind you who's going to go up really hard for this ball. It's either going to break or he's going to win it. But either way, what's Jake Morris doing? You'd be wheeling away. I wouldn't even compete for that one. You'd wheel away and the Cork player behind should be roaring. There should be no need for two Cork players to go up for that. So in the instance of the player on the ground marking Jake Morris, you just wheel away and you wheel away, look for Jake Morris, because you're going, well, if this ball breaks through, he's onto it straight away. So the most dangerous thing that could happen here is that I stay where I am, Jake Morris runs and the ball breaks through to him. Whereas if I break backwards, go with Jake Morris, and the two boys compete and the ball lands down in front of them, that's fine. That's not dangerous. So either way, it's all about the balance of probability is what's going to happen next. And tracking the runner cuts out that, because if you track the runner, well, there's no one to break onto the ball. That's basically it. But these are small things. These are things like me saying it now is all great. I'll go out and do it in a club match myself, because I'll be ring rusty in around robins of leagues. It just happens. So the next day, you can guarantee those two players, that'll be burned into their head, because if you're marking Jake Morris, he goes through and go like that, first thing that back is thinking for the next game is, I can't let that happen to me again. And that back will probably be the last back that you'll see will do that this year. Like, as in, another back will get caught. But you know what I mean? Once you're caught once and you're burnt with it, you won't do it again.
You learn again, yeah.
So, yeah, you just learn. So, like, at the moment, so many players are in that space at the moment of just learning those things. And, like, a lot of other players will come away with lessons the other night. But in that instance, those two lads will be like, and the back unit as a core will be saying to each other, lads, you know, we have to communicate. We gave away two goals the other night because there was no communication and there was nobody down on the breaks. That's really it.
I presume for you. Go on, Scott.
Sorry, but I was going to say to add to your point, Murph, don't you? Like, I suppose when you go training back in November, December, let's say, everyone works on the physical element of your preparation. It's always fitness, it's gym work, it's ball work, etc. But it's the games that help you work on the mental side, you know, getting that mental sharpness. So, like, that incident or that isolated incident you're referencing, like, is probably mental preparation, mental training for those two Cork players we're talking about. It's just, you know, again, the speed at which you assess danger and have your head on kind of a swivel, that gets, you know, I suppose, highlighted when a goal happens like that. But this is all part and parcel of league games and championship preparation. You need these type of incidents to educate yourself and mentally sharpen up. Because we all focus on physical all the time, right? But there's these little things that you have to sharpen up mentally. That's what I was saying, Cork weren't as slick, you know? And again, roll down, fast forward 2 months, that incident more than likely won't happen because he'll be that runner will be tracked.
Okay. I think we're going to move off the big game of the weekend and we'll go to Division 1A. Skell, before we dig into the game itself, what is your official percentage of Clare staying up now? Is it 100% down?
Down. What did I get the last time? Was it 75%?
You gave a 75% chance of being relegated. Well, like, I presume it's more like 98% now.
I have no problem admitting it. I was 100% certain Clare were going to win this game. There was no percentage where I said no.
I'm only delighted that more games were called off the weekend because our predictions are out the window.
Right. Obviously, Limerick and Kilkenny was called off. Three of us got Clare and Wexford wrong. Three of us got Dublin awfully got wrong, which includes you, William.
I don't care, but go on.
We even got Cork wrong. But we got Waterford and Antrim right, so...
what a call to call Waterford winning. It wasn't great.
To answer your question...
Yeah, we can have upset. Sorry, go on, Scott.
Yeah.
My apologies, I drifted off there, but I am giving it... I'm gone to 90% now. Really,
you missed an opportunity there. You should have made it sound like that you'd actually done the calculations here and you went, 91.4% chance of Clare going down. That you don't round off because it makes it sound like there's no math involved.
Well, the trouble is, right? If I was 100% Clare, would certain Clare would beat Wexford, and they didn't, okay?
Right. Can I just stop you there, Scott? Like, I just think your brain isn't working since yesterday, since your birthday. I think you're working in broad strokes because of pints. I think that's it.
Well, the amount of pints.
Is it a bold statement for me to say that?
Let me just say, I drank more pints than Clare scored. All right.
Drinkaware.ie.
So Clare put up 18 scores this afternoon. So Skell had at least 18 pints. Do you want to give us an actual number there, or was that just.
Well, I definitely had over 18 drinks, definitely. 100%.
Right.
Yeah. I reckon over the course of the day, we started. What time was the rugby? 2:15?
Yeah.
So let's say the first point was the rugby for 2:15. Oh, geez, yeah. Oh. I'd say 16, 17 points anyway, handy. And then probably after that, then I don't know how many Malibu milk. Not a clue.
Malibu milk.
And a bottle of red wine in between, sorry.
Bloody. Ah, no.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I know the rugby was rough, but ah, no.
And the good wife, I'll give her credit. I'll give her a huge credit. She stuck with me drink for drink.
Ah, jeez.
Not pints, mind you, no. Jesus Christ.
So that's why you're working in broad strokes. The brain is working in broad strokes there. You can't go quantifying too finely with 91.5% or whatever. It can only be 90.
How many decimal points do you want more so? Let me go 90.48%, okay?
That's good. Okay.
That's the probability that Clare go down. Which I do believe they won't give a shit about.
But it doesn't make a difference to them, really, at this stage.
Not a bit. Yeah.
No.
Not a bit.
But at the same time, I mean, I think it was probably, you know, they had a strong team out. It was, in fairness, great performance out of Wexford. We didn't see it, obviously. It wasn't televised, and we're recording this before the Sunday game. But just from reading the reports of it, like, savage performance out of Wexford in terms of
the
energy.
Did anyone call that game, Murph?
No. I don't.
I'm not just saying, Austin, did you... I didn't hear or see
No, you couldn't call that game. Like, Clare have put in good performances over the league, despite the fact they haven't won. But like, even if you were to look at it, and David Fitzgerald, John Conlon, Tony Kelly back, Mark Rogers playing as well. Like, I mean, they had plenty of lads there of their actual starters. And like, if you were to read Keith Roster's interview after the Kilkenny game in particular, you know, like, I mean, it was painting a very bleak enough picture, a negative picture. Granted, their performance in the second half was good, but in fairness, you couldn't have predicted that they would have put in a performance like that, even though Lee Chin was back. You know, obviously, whatever it is that Lee Chin brings to that dressing room, he's not going to give them all full credit, I'm sure. Around the field, there was great performances. Keane Byrne came away with 9 points. Seamus Casey with 1-3. But there was obviously a big spiritual lift in the dressing room that Chin was back or something. Because and again, Husick Park, to go down there, that's not simple to go down there in... I'm not sure what the weather conditions were like, but around the country it was fairly blustery today. Tough conditions.
Do you know how we're on about Tipperary and the hurt that they were feeling? And they wanted to put a bit of pride back in the support in the jersey with that. Do you think that was the Wexford mentality as well going to Clare? And that maybe Clare suffered a bit of the bit of complacency, maybe?
But possibly. Like, I mean, you can put this down to probably a mix of two things, that maybe there was a little bit of complacency there. Like, I mean, Wexford scored 118 to Clare's 11 points in the last 50 minutes. So they're alone. Like, I mean, Brian Lowen is going to turn around and say, lads, what are we doing there? I think there's an element of both. And like, I've played Wexford before. Wexford, once they get a bit of momentum and get into your face, they really feed off that. But the one thing I'd say about Wexford is, and again, we have to see over the next few weeks, this is one performance. If they have to keep going to the well, kind of a pride thing of going to the well to try and get themselves back afloat, you can only do that so many times. You know yourself, like, I mean, we all see it in sport. There has to be an element of stability and structure and quality to what they're doing, as opposed to getting angry with themselves every week and going out. So I'd say there was a little bit of, yeah, absolutely good performances, but probably the fact that they're so sore over the last few weeks of that, they're really disappointed with their performances, that probably fed into today. And then probably Clare seeing a few of the bigger names coming back, maybe they felt that, you know, subconsciously, I don't think it was a very conscious thing, that the foot came off the gas a small bit. Wexford haven't been playing well. You know, they're coming down to our backyard. We'll finally get a result today. And yeah, maybe that's. But it was very hard to see that happening before the game. None of us predicted it. I didn't see anywhere anybody said, oh yeah, Wexford are going to win this match. You know, so
I doubt even the Wexford fan with the hat wasn't predicting Wexford to win this one. Let's be 100% honest with the way things were going.
That's your man. I think it's Connors.
I was trying to find his name, right? And you know what came up on Google when I checked the Wexford man with the hat? I found an Irish Independent story from the 8th of November 2024, and Wexford is also home to Ireland's biggest Donald Trump fan, and he has a massive MAGA hat. So he's not the guy I was looking for.
That's a random thing to up now, but I'm fairly sure. Oh wait, no, I have him here now. I knew it was Connors. I typed in Connors Wexford hat.
Is it John Connors or Pat Connors? Something like that.
Jesus.
Do you know what? Put on the spot.
Miles Connors.
That sounds right.
Miles Daddles Connors. Yeah.
Again, I don't care who Miles votes for, by the way, but he is not the guy with the massive Trump hat. just to clarify that, he doesn't wear a massive Trump hat on the weekends when he's not wearing a Wexford hat. But
yeah,
I doubt he was predicting it. I doubt too many even Wexford could have been, based on what we'd seen so far. And look, they've pulled a result out of the fire here. Skell, you were looking at the Clare team, right? And obviously they still have defensive troubles. And I think particularly you've got Cleary, who's out injured. It's a key position. But coming back in, you had Tony Kelly, Conlon, David Fitzgerald, Mark Rogers all come in for their first starts. It was a lot closer to the Clare team from last year than some of the teams we've seen over the last couple of weeks. Just in case anyone is coming away from this and thinking, well, this must be a scratch Clare team that got beaten today.
Yeah, I suppose there was a bit of a narrative coming out from the Galway game. There was only, what, three or four starters that started that game. And Galway won that game kind of convincingly. And look, I was in that bracket too, in the sense that, again, there's no cause for concern from Clare. Let's just make that clear. I'm not putting down Clare. But when you have such a rafter of starters coming back into a fold, you would imagine that what Murphy's on about, the quality, execution, everything comes up, you know what I mean? And that this game, for me, I was pretty certain this game was going to be a clear win. But look, in the same breath, I will say, these guys have come back for the first match of the year. It's exactly that. It's their first match of the year, some of these guys. So it's a long season for them as of yet. And they've proven, again, that they can come up to the extremely high level come championship time. So, against league games, not overly concerned, I'd imagine. But I I do fully think that because some Clare players, now I'm not saying it breeds into them, but you couldn't not look at Wexford and the performance they put up to date. And even if you're in the Clare dressing room, go, yeah, we should be winning this one. You know, not even because if you assess both teams from a quality perspective, but just to see the form each team, you know, can potentially produce, you'd say, well, Clare can potentially produce far more than Wexford at the moment. And you'd say, definite win. Maybe creep into the psyche a little bit, but again, you'll get more games into them in the coming weeks. And the challenge games in between these games as well, as like Tipperary played Galway last week. So we don't know what kind of load is going through as well.
Jesus, did it?
Tipperary played Galway last Thursday week. So not this Thursday gone, obviously. They played the Thursday previous.
Can I wonder why you do that? Because obviously there's quite a few games happening at the moment, and you're playing. I know you're going across provinces there, so it'll be later in the year when you play them. But you're playing another 1A team in a challenge game.
That's true. You're playing a team you've already played in the league, so that's out of the way. So there's no real fear of meeting them in a group game again. They're not in the province, correct? Galway C were in a bit of a tricky one because they'll be off 3 weeks now by the time they go back again. You know, so they probably have to get a game in between, which I can understand that. And probably panels are beginning to get cut now. You know, so you could probably have, let's say, 45 guys on a Galway panel. I don't know what the number is, to be honest, lads.
Yeah.
And maybe 5 lads have to go, or 6 lads have to go just for panel numbers. And a challenge game is the best way to give them the opportunity to see who's going to cut the mustard, I'm afraid. And I'd say Liam Cahill's the same way. I'd say of the guys that played today, I'd be pretty certain none of them played against Galway last week. Pretty certain. Yeah. Now, the only one I know played was Noel McGrath for a few minutes. And John McGrath, do you know what I mean? But the guys who started, I doubt, would play against Galway. So, but I can see why you'd fit in a challenge game and why the two teams oppose each other.
Yeah. By the way, this will probably be out of date for a lot of people who listen on Monday because the fixtures may well be announced. But my understanding is that the GA are going to meet at lunchtime on Monday to make a decision on the games that were called off in the weekend just gone. So we lost the 1A clash between Kilkenny and Limerick, and we also lost Laois and Carlow in Division 1B. I think what's going to happen is those two games, because of the way the fixtures are falling, will now go on to St. Patrick's weekend, which is a primarily football weekend. But it's the next break period for some of those teams. So I think it's unlikely to be played before then. I don't know, Murph, if that has a massive change in motivation. I had someone from Limerick making the point earlier that actually, because it pushes back now into the middle of March, it might change it slightly for the teams because it's that bit closer to Championship. Does it make that much of a difference, really?
It's a very subjective thing to try and predict from now. Like, as in, I think teams are going week to week, 2 weeks to 2 weeks. You know, they're looking at, well, what way are our injuries? What way are we trying to set up here? What's the end game? And each result, each match really just kind of decides that. Right, first of all, what's the result? And did we pick up any injuries? Because teams are watching every match to go, well, what's our workload like? And if a few lads break down, straight away, alarm bells are ringing and they're going, hang on here now. Obviously, the workload off the field mixed with our matches is being a bit too much. So really, until the week, let's say Kilkenny and Limerick play, for example, to cancel matches, until that week, it's very hard to judge what way both teams entered. Every team at the moment will enter the game saying, we want 100% commitment. We can take a lot from this game. We want to learn more about the players we haven't seen of. And then the other players, let's say the more established players, it's an opportunity for them to really get game time under their belt. The week that they come back now and play each other, the landscape will even have changed from this weekend. And I'm talking injuries, I'm talking general performances, results, what's your end goal? So the simple answer is yes, it will change the dynamic, but that until the week it comes, we don't know whether that's going to change the dynamic to make it into a really good match, or that it'll be a dead rubber because both teams. My inclination would say that it'll be actually a better match played at Paddy's weekend than this weekend because the ground will get harder now over the next few weeks. Conditions might get a small bit better. It might lead or be more conducive to being a better game. And from what we've seen, because the semi-finals are now gone, we've kind of seen teams relax into this idea that, well, we can commit hard. Look, whatever team we're going to put out, we can commit hard into these matches and play them with full intensity because teams have kind of had a few years of feeling out the league and seeing how does it affect us going into Championship. And as Skell was talking about there with challenge matches, teams are kind of organising challenge matches pre-Championship anyway. So there's, I know it sounds funny that teams at one stage are saying we have too many games, but at the same time are organising challenge matches. Well, it's all kind of part of I suppose, doing things on their terms. So I think Kilkenny and Limerick, by the time March comes, or by the time that game is played on Paddy's weekend, you know, we're talking 3 weeks away. The landscape for them could be completely different, but it also may be an opportunity where Limerick were putting out a very strong team this weekend, so were Kilkenny, but I think that match will actually probably be better suited for Paddy's weekend, that we might just get a bit more out of it. Like if that game was played today, it could have been, like if it was just played anyway, the conditions might have dictated that we would have learned nothing from the game, and each team would have got nothing from it. Whereas give it a few weeks where the weather gets a small bit better, I think actually everybody could take a bit more from it anyway. So
Was the pitch unplayable, Murph, or was the weather clearly just brutal?
Well, both. I think the
pitch is waterlogged.
Yeah, the rain that fell on Friday here was cruel. And then this morning, even overnight, there was huge rain fell. So I think it was kind of a case of that. The pitch couldn't take the water that was after falling. Yeah. That was basically it, yeah.
Carlos was in some condition for having two games in, wasn't it?
It's great, yeah. Fair play to them.
Yeah.
We'll find out what's going to happen with them tomorrow. The Limerick panel that had been named was incredibly interesting on Friday as well. So we were wondering, where's Declan Hannan? He was back in to start at six. We saw Seamus Flanagan was going to be restored to the team after what was effectively an internal suspension, really, the last day. And then you had Casey on the bench about to come back in. We hadn't seen him since the horrific injury he suffered in the championship against Tipperary last year. And we saw Tom Morrissey was going to be on the bench and coming back in for some game time too. So they will probably all have had game time by the time the actual match against Kilkenny comes round. But you can see that even that little bit of extra strength is being added that we were talking about a few weeks ago. And Colin O'Neill had been named to start, I think, in the half forward line as well on the team that came out Friday night. So again, he's finding his way back after getting a bit of game time in the fits. But we didn't get to see the game, clearly, Wexford and Clare, so we'll see the highlights on League Sunday a bit later tonight. But there's a few good points to pick out for Wexford here. I mean, to go the last 50 minutes of the game, because Tony Kelly gets the goal really early in the match for Clare, they win the game effectively 118 to 11 points after the 20th minute. They ran off four scores in a row just before half-time to build that lead they had, which is 15 points to 1-9. So a lot probably for Wexford fans to like. We'd love to hear, I think, from Wexford fans as well, because I know they're very, very active when it comes to comments on this podcast. Just for those who were at Cusick Park and even Clare supporters, is there any concern about the way that they're going now at this stage? Hit us up and let us know what you think. The thing is, Gala, when it comes to Clare, does it really matter if they go to Division 1B for next season, given they know exactly how to win competitions?
I don't think it does at all, to be honest. I think, Murphy, again, you touched on challenge games. Like, you know, the gap between the league and the championship, let's say, there will be two or three games put in there as well. Mm-hmm. And, like, you'll be using your top players, you know, sparingly, you could say, to a degree, to get sharp coming into championship time. So I don't think the league makes an awful lot of difference for Clare. I think, don't get me wrong, they won it last year and won the Ireland. So the formula they adopted last year seemed to work. But, again, it's not a critical... It's important preparation, don't get me wrong. Matches are the best way to sharpen everything, sharpen focus, sharpen skills. But it's not the be-all, end-all having to be in Division 1A. It's just not, you know. So I don't think it makes an awful difference. And I think that sometimes maybe teams might be glad of it, in the sense that you don't have to be under the cosh, under pressure every single week to play these games, you know. That's why I was mentioning, I said last week about Wexford, if they did go down, like, which potentially they said good, it mightn't be the worst thing in the world while they're trying to regroup or bringing more youthful players into the team to get them accustomed to senior hurling. So I don't think it's an off thing if a team goes down, because you can afford to, you know, take a few chances in terms of team selection, take a few chances in terms of giving debuts to players, younger players, etc. So I don't think it makes a difference, Dennis says.
It kind of allows them to catch their breath this morning. Well, if they do go down, like, if your intention is to really blood a lot of younger players, we saw some Wexford fans say over the last 2 weeks that it's kind of that gap between 23 to 28. They're missing a few players in that. But either way, if they're bringing in younger players, the ability to go into 1B and not be staring down the barrel of Limerick and Galway and Tipperary every week or whatever it's going to be in Cork, when you're trying to just, you know, one or two wins to really just get a bit of momentum going. And then, you take a crack at, let's say, if Clare down there next year, take a crack at them. It's kind of a nice balance to find. And it's not all doom and gloom, you know.
If you were to use a case study, you could use Offaly last year. Or Offaly had to use a lot of their under-20s, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they're fantastic players, don't get me wrong, but they had to use them in the league, let's say, where they were coming up against heavy opposition. Do you know what I mean? And there was days where they were taking big beatings, to be fair. You know, I think of the Cork game, obviously. And they got great results against Clare at the end, but, like, to be able to have that opportunity, you know, to do that last year was grand, right? But now, are Offaly the better for it? Do you know what I mean? This year?
Yeah.
You know, are they the better for it? They're probably better, but at the time, you wouldn't think this is great preparation, because they were getting hammered on some games, if you like. Whereas I think if you were, again, I use Wexford, I use, you know, any team who's trying to rebuild or regroup or implement new players, it's not the worst thing. Good phrase there. You can catch your breath a little bit. You know what I mean? Just catch your breath. There's not weekly pressure. Yeah. Whereas at the moment, Wexford are under weekly pressure. Truthfully, they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So again, I don't think it's...
The same can be said for Watford now as well. It's not as if Watford have drifted away from being a big team or anything, but Watford haven't changed management and maybe wanting to give the likes of... Like Stephen Bennett has had his injuries, let's say, over the last few years, and a few lads, Tadhg De Burka and these lads. Like, they can play the 1B knowing that... Bottom line is, I'm going to be hurling 1A next year. They're going to get promoted. But slowly reintroduce those lads. And even, let's say, give a break to Desi Hutchinson, who's been playing with Ballygunner, you know, right up into Munster Championship phase. Like, so they can actually, even for them who are, would you call it, I wouldn't even call it transition, I suppose, they just need a little bit of time to change their style of hurling, change new management, not have a focus on them, and just, I suppose, recalibrate for Munster. So I just think that even for the likes of them who aren't fully really going through a transition, it just allows them to steady the ship and attack back into a Munster Championship and be in 1A next year as well.
Yeah. So lay of the land then in Division 1A, which is, look, it's a little bit messed up by the fact that games were postponed, but Tip have played 4 games, 3 wins, 6 points, sit top of the table. Kilkenny and Galway have both played 3 games each and are both on 4 points. Cork have now played 3 games, they're on 3 points. Limerick have 3 points, but they've 2 games in hand on Tipperary because of the game been off this weekend. Wexford have already played 4 of their matches. They've got 2 points, crucially at this stage, to give them a hope. And Clare have lost their opening 3 games and prop up the table with no points so far. Don't think too many people would have expected that, even, you know, off the back of the All-Ireland last year. Division 1A then. Oh, look at this table. Offaly, 4 games played, 3 wins, 1 draw, 7 points. Seems they're going well. 105 points for and just 80 points against. Very impressive. Best score difference in the division as well. I think we see where we're going with this. Waterford, after their win against Antrim this afternoon, they've got 4 points from 3. So they had their loss against Carlow. Same as Dublin. They meet next time out. We'll preview that in the members pod. And then Carlow have only played 2 games because their match against Laois wasn't played today. They've got 3 points, also unbeaten. 1 win, 1 draw so far, having played Waterford and Offaly. Laois and Antrim both have 2 points each. They have both come by the way of wins against Westmeath, who prop up the table. Westmeath, 3 defeats from 3. And Antrim have now played 4 of their games at this stage, so their break week is coming up soon. So that's a lay of the land in Division 1B. And here's what happened this weekend. And also, we have a listener who has just tweeted me David Fitzgerald's comments after the game. So I'm looking forward to reading them now in a second. But what happened over this weekend? Today, we had Waterford win quite comfortably, 223 to 11 points away from home against Antrim. That was in Corrigan Park. I was kind of keeping an eye on this earlier on, and I was saying to you that, okay, Waterford are playing with the wind, but they're gone 12 points up. They're 14 points up. I think at one stage it went to 16. And Antrim never really got back. So Stephen Bennett won 4, got a goal from a penalty as well. Desi Hutchinson starting for the first time this season, 4 points. Pádraig Fitzgerald put over 3 frees of his 4 points. Jamie Byrne with 3 points from play. Plenty of spread of scores for Waterford across the day. So comfortably ahead with the wind, 214 to 4 points at half time. And if they're going to pick up points, and I know Waterford is always going to be a difficult game, Murph, it was going to come at Corrigan Park because of the record that they have. That is a pretty heavy beating they've just taken there.
Yeah, it's a big beating, and it's a beating where there was no kind of real glimmer of them actually causing any sort of surprise in this game. Like, I think after 10 minutes there was about three points in it before the first goal, and really from then Watford kicked on. And look, to summarise this game, it kind of just fluctuated between 16 to 18 points really at any given time, depending when you're watching the score. Stephen Bennett back for Waterford, obviously scoring 1-4. Desi Hutchinson getting 4 points as well. Waterford had 12 different scores, and like lads coming off the bench popping scores as well. So you just see that there's just a well-oiled machine today. But I think it also probably reflects Antrim's resistance or lack thereof. Like, I mean, 11 points, they just won't be happy with that. And again, you know, I suppose Davey said about being in Tullamore the last day, that, you know, their form away from home has been very poor, whereas they turn it on in Corrigan Park. This is probably, I'd say, by their own admission, even their worst performance in Corrigan Park in quite a while.
Because, like, by the sounds of it, Murph, this is one, again, where they were out-battled. So, like, physically, they lost a lot of the breaks against Offaly that day. And you maybe put it down as, right, that's one bad performance. You'd be really annoyed that some of the players, you know, probably didn't play to the level that we know they're capable of from what we've seen in recent seasons. But you expect that they're going to get this right. And it seems that a lot of them same problems were actually there in Belfast today.
That's it. Like, we've seen them perform in Corrigan Park over the last few years. And even if they were playing against a team who just had that bit more quality and maybe just pulled away at the end. You know, their performances have been really good. They've been really sticky to play against. They've gotten their few results in Corrigan Park, particularly at this time of the year as well. But today was very much like after the 10th minute, like Kieran Molloy got a black card around the 16th minute and the score really pushed out during that time. And at half time, they were going in, I think they'd only 4 points on the board at that stage and down by 16 points. And after that, that was really the tail of the match. It was just 16 to 18. That's the thing, yeah. So like, there's very, you know, I haven't seen anything by way of an interview from Davey or Anthony after.
Oh, don't worry. I got the quotes here.
I'm just reading it, and it's, yeah, let's just say it's colourful.
Okay. Well, I don't... Well, I haven't seen it, so I'm not sure.
Do you know when new management teams take over, right, there's usually a little bit of a kick or a bounce, right? Mm-hmm. And then slowly you'll start seeing progression and the integration of a specific type of game plan. But, like, it's very hard to see Antrim. They're regressing. Would you agree with me there? Obviously, evidently, it takes days to drop, but there's no sign of a planned progression. Do you know what I mean?
So, Westmeath game aside, where apparently they play quite well, I was talking to someone who was at the Dublin game and they were shocked by how bad Antrim were that night, as well as Dublin played. We didn't get to see it because, again, it wasn't televised. We saw them in full Technicolor against Offaly before the break. And they were really, really poor that day. And by all reports, like, again, I was just trying to read some of the newspaper reports to get a bit of nuance on how they played. And I read some of the reports from, say, publications in the north. And again, it was very much decrying, say, the lack of physicality, the lack of drive, the lack of a whole load of things. And that, to me, would indicate they are going backwards based on the performances from last year. Because Antrim put in some good performances this time last year.
That's true, yeah. But you just said lack of drive there. Isn't that a very worrying trait in a team?
Yes.
Extremely worrying. Do you know what I mean? Again, we can, you know, fitness, touchwork, strength, you can kind of fix all them technical items. You know what I mean? But like the mental side of drive, Jesus, if that's not there on day dot, you know what I mean, from the first minute, you're in big trouble against teams like Watford. You know, especially when there's a perceived, you know, gulf in class. Being respectful here, there is like.
Do you want me to read the Davey quotes then? I know you love them.
No, we'll save it for the members pod.
No. I think as well we're putting this in. You can by all means be more forthright in your views in the members' pod if you want. That's a beautiful way of setting it up. So, quote, I am just frustrated as I want to make a difference here. I'm not coming up here for the crack, so we either accept it or make a decision. I'm ready to fight again on Tuesday night when training gets back. I said it's going to get worse before it gets better because they've been giving up on the games way before this and we have to get that sorted. When we're on song, we're good. But when they got the goals, you could see the confidence drain out of them. So there's work to be done on that. End quote. Are you indicating this lack of drive and fight is something that Davey should be instilling in them, Skell, or what's your assessment?
Well, sometimes teams will... Sometimes, I use the word sometimes now, they'll embody the, you know, the persona of their manager. Do you know what I mean? And like, he was... Over the last number of years, he seems like he's very built on honest, hard work effort. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which would constitute drive. And so if that's not there, that's a worrying sign. Like, it's too early to say, like, geez, here's me looking at it, but are they playing for them? Are they happy with the system that's been adopted for them? You know, is it understood? It's just a bit tricky, you know, in the sense that, like, if they're implementing a specific type of game plan, are the Antrim players flourishing or are they struggling? Do you know what I mean? And so you know, we say horses for courses. Do you know what I mean? But sometimes you have to design a specific course for your horse. Do you know what I mean? And so in this instance, like, you have what you have, so maybe you can't. You know, it's gas. I look at an awful lot. When Limerick first came on the scene, guys, every team tries to play like Limerick. Do you know what I mean? Mm. You know, but you don't have the Limerick players, like. So that's the big thing. So look, maybe they're trying to do a specific type of game plan. It's not working. Obviously, it's not. But drive is the worrisome one for me. Well, like, if I see that in a team and say, well, there's no drive, I'm questioning, is there leaders in the team? Is there characters? Is there, you know, a bit of a rift between management and players? Who knows? Do you know what I mean? Because that's as I always say, that's rule number one. If you're not up for the fight, you're going to get knocked out.
I've said multiple times, I'm not just saying this to play a devil's advocate, like, Dave Fitzgerald has got a kick out of teams when he's gone with them. He is a serial winner of competitions, even if you disagree with his methodology sometimes. The only concern I would have if I was an Antrim supporter reading those quotes is this idea, Murph, of why am I giving my time to come up and train if these guys aren't doing X, Y, and Z? Like, that surely shouldn't be the way the manager should look at things. This has to be a collective thing. Like, that's almost a case of you're separating a certain degree of responsibility when you say, well, look, I'm not coming up here for the good of my health. Like, these guys need to be better.
Yeah, and that's that. Like, that's the thing I often look at when I'm just trying to read his comments and see exactly what the message is he's trying to portray about.
The direct quote here, just in case anyone thinks that I'm serializing him here, I'm not coming up here for the crack. It's his line.
Yeah, there's been a few different statements that kind of indicate as to what way Davey looks at these things. And like one of the ones, I'm just looking at it on the BBC here as we're speaking. And he just said, you shouldn't be beat by that many points at home. Watford were on song today and they wanted to show me, a message since I didn't go back down there, and they did. I'm just going, what has that got to do with the Antrim boys? Like, you know, as in, that's no good to the Antrim lads. I think Watford were out to play for Watford today and play for Peter Queeley, and, you know, Stephen Bennett's back. He wants to get them miles and legs. I don't think anybody was going, listen, you know, Davey, you've brought us to an All-Ireland final a few years ago. Let's say, you know, 15 years ago or whatever. You came back and you did it again, or as in, you managed us again, fine. Like, even a comment like that kind of hints towards as to where he thought that this game was to be gauged or where the drive was to be taken from. Like, at the end of the day, there's quite often a phrase that we see with Davey is that, oh, you should see us training. Geez, we're unbelievable when we're training. But then when we play a match, we're not great. Again, you're the manager. That's down to you. Like, you know, as in, if they're All-Ireland beaters in training, if they're not producing it on the field, it's not one player, it's the collective. So, you know, as in, that's you again. Like, a few years ago, we saw when Liam Cahill or Tipperary played Limerick down the Gaelic grounds. It was last year, 2 years ago. I can't really remember. But, you know, Liam Cahill was talking about, I don't really know where it's going wrong. But at the same time, kind of took, you know, basically said, like, you know, that's down to me.
That was last summer, by the way.
Last summer, yeah. But kind of going, you know, that's down to me to try and figure out and so on. Like, but I just kind of feel that there is a little bit of playing down. Like, Antrim weren't in a bad position when he took them over. Granted, players have left. But like, Darren Gleeson had a really kind of, I would call it a positive run with Antrim over the last few years. And right. I don't like saying that, but these lads, like, I see a few quotes there saying that psychologically, you know, these lads, what was it he said? Psychologically, they knocked themselves, or psychologically, there's something there anyway. He was saying psychologically, these are some of the echoes we saw with Watford saying that, oh, I inherited a team like from Liam Cahill. It's almost as if he's saying, and he's not saying it, I'll give him credit, he's not saying that, but that those are the kind of hints I get there, as opposed to just going, I took over there 10 weeks ago, 4 months ago, whatever it was, and, you know, things have been going really well, but we're just not getting the performances. You don't have to reference what happened before you, because to be honest, if you are referencing it, it's going backwards. It's not forwards, or it's not stagnating, it's going backwards at the moment. So that's just the one thing I look at to go, don't put this back on the Antrim players themselves. There may be an element of that, and you know, that's up to the management to decide. But publicly, I think there's responsibility for managers and management, even if the media and the public know that you're just absorbing it for the players for the time being. Yeah. There is a responsibility to do that, because if the players' heads aren't in the right place, and that maybe they're just lacking confidence, maybe that's all it is. Like, it's nothing else, it's just lacking confidence. In order to give them the space to actually get the confidence back up, you kind of go, look, it's, you know, this one's on me and I made the wrong decision and so on. And people know that it's not necessarily that's the case, but they can recognize that, well, actually he's absorbing this for the lads. And then you get it back from the lads. What did Jake Morris say the other night? Liam Cahill deserves these victories. Liam Cahill, we want to play for Liam Cahill and so on. Because Liam Cahill has taken it on the chin quite a few times for those players. So that's just where I'm looking at this, don't keep selling the Antrim boys downstream. Like, you know.
Sorry, do you find, I also find that when you deflect away from yourself as a manager, it actually adds more pressure onto you and the team.
Exactly. There's no deflection happens.
Players will think a lot of you, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah.
You can be sure the Antrim guys are going to read this article or hear or whatever, and they won't be best pleased. Like, yes, they'll take it on the chain. Of course they will, and they go back to work again on Tuesday. But like, if you have a manager who accepts responsibility, even at times when it's not his, you know, it's not him, you know, then you grow under estimation. Whereas if you deflect, it's a tough sell then to go back in. It's a really tough sell.
Yeah, and like, I even point towards Keith Roster. Like, Keith Roster was quite honest in his interview there last week against McKennie. And there was no expecting Keith Ross to come out and say, look, this is my fault, because the circumstances were different. Like, as in, you could just see that the players just, you know, the quality wasn't there, and then they reacted. But Keith Ross was very honest, and he I suppose, just spoke that, look, I suppose there's going to be a few backward steps before we go forward here, but people can see with his circumstance, yeah, that's a very fair reflection. But maybe things like that, saying statements like that, got a reaction from, like, we're trying to figure out why did Wexford play so well this week? We pointed towards Lee Chin, okay. But I think some of that will be, you know, if I was a player and the Keith Roster is a Wexford legend, if you look at him going, lads, we're letting him down, at least perform. And then suddenly you get a performance. When the managers and the management, part of your job before you do anything is to absorb a certain amount for the players to allow them to perform. At the moment, I'm just kind of seeing, you know, if you want this Antrim team to actually perform, don't be talking about them in the paper in a negative tone, as if like, oh, you know, they're brilliant lads in training, but their performances are poor. That's going to do nothing for them. And it's, for me, it's just something that we've seen with Waterford as well. Whereas we see Waterford now, they're going well, you know. So if there's one element there that I think could be improved on, it's just don't too early do this. It's early doors. There's no need to, I suppose, put the Antrim lads out front and center and say, look, these lads aren't good enough. And, you know, it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
The bit that jumps out for me as well is this idea that Waterford were somewhat motivated by trying to beat him as opposed to trying to beat Antrim today.
And this thing, and I don't like talking about it too much, but like, I mean, last week he mentioned himself in the third person after the Offaly match, like, you know, saying that you can bring all the Davy Fitzgeralds you want up to Antrim. It's like, that's just a small indication where I'm going, listen, stop, take the person out of this at the moment.
Can we just call a spade a spade here, right? Can we just call a spade a spade?
Well,
right?
I want to distance myself immediately from whatever you're about to say.
Are you not condone this message?
Well, actually, for people watching now, I'm just going to stop my camera.
Go on. If this is going to be the end of the hurling pod, we've had a good 3.5, 4 years.
I want you to say to me, if it's true or false, if you agree or disagree, what I'm going to say, right? So after the Waterford stint last year, right, he said he was drained, he needed a break, he can't do it, right? So then he goes up to Antrim, right? So the first question I ask myself is, what is the primary motivation of going up to Antrim? Truthfully. I look at it and I think it's not improving Antrim. It's not getting them, you know, to really contest in the name of character. It's not. It's a different reason, let's put it that way to you. Now, is that true or false? It's true. I'll check up with the silence, it's true. Thank you, gentlemen, because if it was false, you'd correct me straight away. So it's not. So thank you. Next.
I can't determine his motivation, by the way, but...
Well, no one can, but all we can do is just make, I suppose, somewhat semi-informed assumptions.
I think my concern, again, if I was an Antrim supporter in all this, is that the point of bringing in a very high-profile manager and management team and the idea that Davy Fitzgerald was going to kick Antrim to the next level is that this time last year, Antrim are beating Dublin at home in the league. I think the Antrim team from last year would have put in a much better performance against Offaly. And now Antrim are facing a situation where they play Laois, play Carlow, need to win those games to be assured of staying in Division 1B for next season because of the results that they've had so far. This, what we've seen so far, has been a worse version of Antrim compared to last year. And I take into account a couple of lads travelling, they've had some injuries, there's all that. But still, Antrim look at a lower level collectively than they did last season. And that's having brought in a manager who was meant to bring you to the next level. And I've seen no evidence whatsoever that Antrim are going to be any closer to the top three in Leinster, which is surely the point of bringing in a very high-profile management team, is to try and kick you on. I think Antrim are also going to be fighting relegation in Leinster. So... Yeah. Does that make sense then, if you're going to put...
It makes no sense. But can I ask you the question as well? So we made reference to the potentially Clare and Wexford going down from Division 1A to 1B, and we also said it's not a big issue. I will say, if Antrim went down from Division 1B into Division 2, that's a big issue. That's different. You know, that's a team, let's say, who should be easily surviving in 1B, I think, respectfully, and trying to prosper and grow into the Liam McCarthy Championship. So them, if they do happen to go down to divisions, that's not a positive step for Antrim hurling.
They're a senior championship team, so therefore they should be in the top 10, 11 teams in the country. So they should be definitely in the top two flights. So yeah, there you go. That's the latest missive from Davy Fitzgerald. Let's not get away from the lead here. Look at Offaly, top of the table in Division 1B. Dan Ravenhill, who is... I'm going to give you credit here, Skell. When you scoffed, and somebody brought that up in the comments, the reason you scoffed was not because I said Dan Ravenhill might make it difficult for Screeny to get back in the team. You were scoffing because you know how good Screeny is.
I was pointing towards the potential. We know how good Screeny is at under 20 level, of course, and how good he's good for his club. And I was saying the ceiling for Adam Screeny is huge. It's very, very high. So his potential is massive. So I'm saying, like, that's how highly I rate the kid. You know what I mean? Mm. That he can go on to senior level and really produce for Offaly for 15 years to come, etc. So it wasn't me putting slight towards Dan Ravenhill. Look at the point. I just watched the point he got, you know, under in a pressure situation from a long way out. Don't get me wrong. I was pointing towards Screeny. Not saying get Dan Ravenhill out. I was saying get Screeny in. Wherever that is, let's say, and who that's for, that's different kettle of fish. But like Dan Ravenhill can surely be accommodated in that team. It doesn't have to be replaced. I use an inverted commas job by Screeny, surely.
No, I think so. I think so. Owen Callis has to get back into this team as well, who's been, you know, leading the scoring for the last while. Now Brian Dygan's hitting the freeze really well for Offaly in this league campaign, but I think Cal gets back into the half-forward line. Ocean Kelly seems to have now found a position in the half-forwards, which means that they can just kind of rejig things a little bit. Charlie Mitchell, for me, is nailed on starter 14. Yeah. The other two players in the inside forward line are probably going to be Ravenhill or Screeny and Dygan on the other side. Now, there's no reason that Dygan couldn't come out and give a more physical presence in the half-forward line, and you could play Ravenhill in one corner and Screeny in the other.
Are you keeping Ravenhill in the corner only, in the forward lane?
Not necessarily, but
we've seen him on the pitch, like, obviously.
Well, I was looking at the interview with him and his brother Ross after the game, and both the lads have definitely had a little bit of a growth spurt as well, compared to where they would have been at, say, a minor. And I think when a bit more kind of lean muscle goes onto the frame as well, there's no reason that Dan Ravenhill can't play in a more central position, I think, further down the road.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I think probably playing him in the corner makes sense. And you're just hoping, for any Offaly supporters around the place, that Dan doesn't pick up another injury. Because unfortunately, he got injured against Laois in, I'm going to say it was the second round of the Joe McDonagh last year. It was definitely very early, first or second game.
Hamstring injury,
isn't it? Yeah, basically ripped his hamstring. And it ended up ruining his whole year because he didn't get to play much more in the Joe McDonagh. And he was actually only coming off the bench in the final of the under 20 on the June bank holiday weekend. So effectively, it was a month and a half out when the hurling was very intense for him. So you would hope that he gets a clean run of form. But again, he's looked very impressive. And the two boys from Ballinamere who did most of scoring. It was 18 points between Dignan and Ravenhill. They were kind of sharing the freeze around between the two of them. And yeah, I mean, this is one where Offaly probably shouldn't have won, lads, because the position they found themselves in, where Dublin looked like they were about to pull away, certainly when it got round to about 10 minutes to go. But then Offaly outscored Dublin 11 points to 1-3 in the last, what proved to be 17 minutes, because the 7 minutes of injury time. Dublin, of course, weren't helped either by the fact that they picked up a red card when Conor Burke was sent off with about 5 minutes of normal time left. That maybe gave Offaly a little bit of incentive. But Offaly just about eked it out and, you know, got that very, very late score as well. Again, this is not a case of Dublin going any weaker or anything. They were seeing this as a big promotion match for them. Donald Burke was back in the team. Kevin Burke started as well. Colin Curry got his first minutes after an Athena win in the All-Ireland. Sean Curry, Paul O'Dea came off the bench during the game as well. Like, this is probably the strongest version we've seen of Dublin in the league so far. And the reality is they just got edged out. So for me, this is it's a top result, Murph. This put Offaly actually in the promotion shake-up now. As pessimistic as I've been the last two or three weeks in the pod.
Pessimistic about Offaly, have you?
Yeah, I've been playing them down a little bit, I think.
Yeah,
more when I reflect on it now.
Yeah.
I'm willing to, you know, accept and grow now.
Playing them down. When have you ever played down Offaly? Jesus Christ. We're at this 4 years now, and it's, in fairness, you've been a champion of the Offaly young lads coming through. But no, like, the result the other night is one that it's very fair to say, like, it's not disrespectful to Offaly, but when you take all things into consideration, this was set up to be Dublin's strongest team they were going to put out so far, and they'd been playing really well. It was in Croke Park. There was a number of factors there, but this is another nice little marker for this Offaly group to go, yeah, we were in a nice little dogfight there with a good Dublin team who had Nafina lads back, had Donald Burke back, which is obviously a big part of it. And when it came down to it, we really dug in, we got the scores, and came down to one last gasp, free for a point, and we won it. Like, that's a nice little thing to be waking up now Monday morning for those Offaly lads, in terms of it's another step. Like, we're talking about other teams, Tipperary taking a step in the right direction and so on, and different teams, Offaly having a, or not Offaly, should I say, Wexford having a good win at the weekend. But this is a nice little marker for these Offaly lads. So, and one that was, I'd say, for the hurling community in general, it's not a complete shock, but was certainly unexpected at the moment, that maybe we just thought it was game too early without the likes of Screeny and so on. Granted, Ravenhill, Dynan, the boys, hurling well, Charlie Mitchell, Killian Sampson, all these lads going well. But, overall, great win.
I should preface this by saying that Offaly beat Dublin at Croke Park a couple of years ago and didn't go on to win the Joe McDonagh that year. So always beware of teams who peak early on in the season and get these big results. Not that as a sports fan, you can't enjoy the little wins along the way. It's not all about big pictures. We call this peak.
You said hit their peak?
That was the year that Joe McDonough, wasn't it, against Carlo, was it? No?
Yeah. They lost the final against Carlo that summer, but they'd beaten Dublin. Yeah. They'd beaten Dublin earlier in the year, and there was that feeling that, you know, going up to Croke Park and beating a team who were established in the Leinster Championship, this was a real indication that they were going to be nice and strong later in the year. And it didn't pan out the way that they'd hoped. So a lot can change between now and Championship. But I think definitely for Offaly, beating Antrim, beating Dublin in the league, ahead of playing them in the Leinster Championship, where those teams are going to be fighting to stay in it, no bad thing at this time of the year. So that's a very good win for them. So, yeah, the shake-up then in 1B, as I mentioned, Offaly top by 3 points, but Waterford do have a game in hand. Waterford play against Dublin this coming week. So you've got Waterford and Dublin both on 4 points. Both can't really afford to drop points because Dublin's defeat to Offaly and Waterford having lost to Carlo. Carlo play against Antrim, where Antrim are fighting for their lives at the moment, and Carlo on 3 points, but Carlo do have 2 games in hand on Offaly at the moment. They have drawn against Offaly and they have beaten Waterford. So Carlo, I think, will be quite hopeful of particularly beating Laois, Antrim, Westmeath to put themselves in a strong position. So good luck deciding who are going to be the top two. Again, it's two go up and there's a straight final in this division. So exciting to see what happens there. Just before we finish the main pod for this week, and thank you to everyone who is subscribing to us on various audio platforms, liking us on the YouTube, throwing comments in. People love Tony O'Gregan from last week was my main takeaway. I want to give Donegal some credit here because a couple of people tweeted me about this earlier as like result of the weekend. This is pretty incredible because Kerry have been operating at a high level for a long time, and I know they are in a rebuild at the moment, but Donegal beat Kerry in Division 2A this afternoon, 5-14 to 3-16 in Letterkenny. They were 6 points down at one point in the second half, and then they got goals from Peter Kelly, Liam McKinney and from Rory Campbell, came through, won the game, and Donegal have now got 2 wins and they're chasing down at the top of that league. So I don't know if Kerry are going to be able to turn it around from here, but that is a significant result for Donegal against a team that have been operating, you know, high-end McDonagh Cup and in Division 1 over the last few years quite a bit as well. So well done to the Donegal Hurlers. That is some win indeed. Lads, it's been a pleasure for the main pod. We'll preview the other games on the members pod. For now, Paul Murphy, thank you.
Thanks very much.
James Skell, a year older, not necessarily a year wiser. Thank you.
Cheers, Will.
And we'll see all you listeners next week. Thanks a million.